Well, hello and happy Monday, football fans. Welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. I'm James Sharman, as always, sitting beside John Molinaro. J-Mo, what a good weekend it was for football fans. Some big games, some odd results, and a ton to talk about.
Yeah, some very interesting results with Manchester City dropping points at home to Hull City.
Yeah.
North London Derby.
Yep.
Interesting one there.
Yeah.
Manchester United needing a late goal to salvage a draw against West Ham.
So. Conspicuous in your absence there. You're not talking about Arsenal's.
Arsenal getting...
We will get to at some point in this podcast.
Getting hammered in the derby.
Sure. Yes, yep. Yes. Harry Kane. The new Shearer, you know.
Yep. Fantastic.
He's been knighted over there right now already. Amazing things. Anyway, we're going to talk to Neil Davison at the top, though. Tottenham TFC. Also, Neil's a longtime Chelsea fan, I should add. So, Neil, welcome back to the podcast. Quickly, before we get to MLS here, 7 points, Neil, for Chelsea on Man City. Is it done and dusted?
I would like to think so, but I'm not going to declare a winner quite yet. Anything can happen in that league, and Chelsea can drop points in some odd places. So I'm gonna hope we increase the lead a little bit more first.
But you must be feeling pretty good about yourself, or no?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're a fun team to watch. They play attractive football, and yes, I certainly have no complaints about the season.
Let me ask you, as an educated Chelsea fan, are you growing tired of Jose Mourinho just yet? Or as long as he keeps getting results and wins, you don't care what he does off the field?
Well, I think you kind of view him as the problem child. There's a wonderful side to him, and then there's also a slightly annoying side to him, and you have to really take both ends of the equation.
Well, that's a good little segue to TFC. They can be quite annoying at times, and good and bad, and different ends of the story here. Here we are again, Neil. We have discussed this very same topic probably for the last 8 years on various TV shows and radio shows and podcasts. On paper, TFC look pretty good. They seem to be, filling those holes, cementing those cracks. Do you believe that this will be the year that Toronto FC will finally reach the promised land?
The playoffs, which we've only ever seen in the distance, really. I think they could. For one, as you know, there'll be six teams going into the playoffs in each conference. So that's one extra kick at the can. And I think they have looked at their roster and filled some holes. I think that was part of the problem is in the past, they kind of tried to get the quick fix with the stars and didn't look at the rest of the roster. I think they've done that, and I think they've signed some big-name players who actually want to be here. Having said that, it does take time for these people to knit together. So I think it's going to take time for that team to get its act together, and starting seven games on the road is not going to help matters. So I think they'll be better, but I don't think it's going to be instant success.
Neil, what have you made of this offseason? Not just in terms of, you know, the rebuilding and, you know, the roster moves, Jermaine, you know, gone, bringing in Jovinko, bringing in Altidore, but just kind of, I mean, my impression is, or my sort of idea is that, you know, past offseasons, they seem pretty rushed and that they're right up until this first game of the season, they're still trying to put things together. It seems like now they've kind of addressed the major holes. They've got everyone in camp a full month before the start of the season. So I'm curious to hear your take on how this offseason compares to past offseasons.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's definitely a sense that there was a bit more of a plan in place. Ryan Nelson was hired sort of right on the cusp of the preseason, so he didn't have much of a plan to start with or have a chance to institute one. I think that when Greg Vanney took over, they definitely did sit down and do their homework and identified needs, places they had to strengthen, back up in goal, the defense, you know, all the obvious areas. And I think they've gone ahead and done that. They've made some sound signings. The spine of the team is much stronger. I think they might still want to add on the wing, on the flank, but I think they've done quite a efficient job of ticking off boxes throughout this season. They definitely, I think, had a plan.
Do you think there's a big concern at MLSC and obviously within the league itself with the whole CBA situation. It's expired. There's talk about a strike, a work stoppage. Can this league afford to go on strike, really? I mean, given the momentum they're building this offseason, some you know, name players coming in, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, we think, at some point, possibly, Sebastian Giovinco. I mean, they can't possibly. How much harm would that do this league?
I think it would be a very dangerous if there was any kind of stoppage. These days, you know, there are so many alternatives for your entertainment dollar and sports and everything else that I think people move on. They have a very quick attention span. And you're right, they have some big names this year that they want to try and capitalize on. So it would be dangerous to have any kind of break. But, you know, the way this league is set up, is, as you know, it's so complex, bizarre, fluid. I don't know, you can use so many adjectives. And I think it's turned into a league of a few haves and a lot of have-nots. And I think the players have some legitimate gripes that need to be addressed.
Related to the CBA, Neil, unless, you know, the new collective bargaining agreement adds a fourth designated player spot, then surely that's going to end Gilberto's tenure with Toronto FC. He's already, you know, down in Brazil trading with Vasco da Gama. If he does go, and all indication is that he will, how do you think he'll be remembered? How will we look back at the Gilberto tenure of TFC?
I think I will certainly wonder what he might have been, because I think we only saw flashes of him for a couple of reasons. One, he wasn't in great condition when he came to camp. I'm still not sure why that was. Two, Toronto never really seemed to find a place for him with Defoe's injuries. He was playing with different partners. Towards the end of the season, I think we got to see some flashes of the fact he could do a little bit of everything. But I don't think we'll really ever get we'll ever know what the full story was, because we didn't really get a chance to see it. I feel bad, because he was certainly a nice fellow and he was committed to the cause, and he didn't really get his chance. And certainly what's happened to him now is a bit unfair, but that's the business side of football.
Yeah, such is the life of a professional footballer. You mentioned Defoe there before. I'm interested to hear your take on how the deal with Sunderland panned out in respect. Did TFC get full value for him in terms of, you know, getting Altidore in exchange? Or could they have gotten more?
Well, I'm not sure if they could have gotten more. I think, you know, without sounding silly, I think if they could have got more, they would have. I think that Defoe wanted out, and everybody knew that. And I think he was more in demand than Altidore was, so Sunderland, I think, got the better of the deal in that regard. I think, to be honest, I think it was the best deal they could make in the circumstances. They get a striker who has had success in the past year, who wants to be here. Michael Bradley, his teammate, wants him here. And they send a player who, when he was good, but didn't want to be there anymore and was becoming a distraction. So I think changes had to be made, and I think they did as best as they could in the circumstances.
And also, by not putting any monetary figure on the transfers, both clubs can avoid potential embarrassment, I suppose, by saying, you know, we were ripped off, or we weren't ripped off. Neil, I don't know about you, but I'm beginning to really enjoy the contrast between Toronto FC and Vancouver in MLS and how they go about their business. You know, TFC is much about hype, big names and big monies. And there's Vancouver doing things very quietly, very modestly. And I guess we're going to find out which way works best, but I'm finding it, you know, within Canada, quite an interesting comparison.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, because every once in a while you sort of look over to the West Coast and go, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Or they just did that. And I'm really impressed by their coach, Robinson. I think he's a smart fellow with a good eye for talent. And you have to think there are good things ahead for that organization. Just every time a Canadian age group roster is released, the number of players from the Whitecaps residency is quite astounding. So they must be doing something right out there. And if they can score some more goals this year, they could really do some damage. But I think that comes across as a pretty professional operation out there.
You know, we were talking about coaching there briefly. What's your impression of Greg Vanney this year, Neil? Obviously, he inherited the team, you know, rather late in the campaign. He's got his full squad, early enough in the campaign, in the preseason this year. With the expanded playoff result format, surely there's no excuse for him not to make the playoffs, I would think.
Well, I think the expectations will be very high. As you say, he's got the whole preseason to put his plan in place. He's had a very deep wallet to dig into to finance the players he wanted. He's pretty much got everything they want, I think. So just as I think general manager Tim Bezbatchenko was put on the clock the day that he fired Ryan Nelson, I think Greg Vanney is now on the clock with him. The last 10 games, he didn't really have a chance to put his game into action. I think Defoe wasn't there, so the top striker was missing. It'll be interesting. He says he wants to play an attractive brand of football with Toronto FC kind of taking charge, and he's got some good players at his disposal now. So we'll see if they can put it in effect. But again, you know, the schedule is very bizarre with the being away so much at the beginning, being home at the end. It's sort of typical Toronto FC. They fix 9 things and then something else breaks.
One of the, I think, interesting off-season storylines was this whole issue of the captaincy. Setting aside that they probably didn't handle, well, not probably, they didn't handle it well. If they were going to change captains or they were thinking about it, they probably should have just, you know, the first day of training camp, let us know. So I understand that they've bungled this too a bit, but I don't know. Is this a big issue if they change captains, Neil? Do you think should Stephen Caldwell be captain of Toronto FC, or should it be Michael Bradley, or should it be someone else?
Well, I think that they've maneuvered themselves into a position where it can only be Michael Bradley. With the comments made from Tim Leiwicki in the courting of Jovinko and Altidore, it was made pretty clear that that Bradley was involved. He was consulted about them. He did some recruiting, apparently. We're led to understand that he's done something with his contract to help make these deals happen. So there was a message last week on YouTube with a message from the fans. It was Michael Bradley. It wasn't Stephen Caldwell. So, you know, we've gone down that road. I think whether it works depends on Caldwell and how magnanimous he is in when he gives up the captaincy. I thought Caldwell was an excellent captain, but he is 34 and has had, you know, some injuries, and Bradley is the future of the club. So I don't really have any issue with giving it to Bradley. I think that, as you say, they should have done it immediately just to nip the story in the bud rather than say we're going to wait a couple of weeks until Bradley gets back in camp. I mean, they could surprise us, I guess, but I think it would be stunning if they didn't hand the captain's armband to Bradley after the off-season we've had.
We're talking to Neil Davison of the Canadian Press. Neil, quickly, in years past, you know, there's been a movement to have a very Canadian identity with Toronto FC. You know, signing Julian de Guzman, having various Canadian internationals, and hoping that some of the young players would grow into important roles in this team. And you know, you look at this squad right now, and it's very international, especially with Damien Piqué and Benoit Cherou arriving, Jose to a certain extent, Jovinko. Do you think this team needs to have a Canadian identity, or is that just irrelevant at this point? It's just about results for this fan base.
I think the ideal thing is to have a little bit of both. You need the global team, I think, because you want to mine the best talent that you can. But you also need to, in MLS, you need your homegrown players just to save money, if nothing else. There's a financial advantage to having homegrown players. And eventually you hope that they will become a source of starting talent for you. So I think you need some of that. It's disappointing when you see a player like Daniil Henry leave. Toronto didn't seem to value enough him enough late in the season last year. He was Nick Hagland really had the edge over him in the starting race, and yet West Ham thought enough of Henry to sign him. So that's a bit of a head scratcher to me when you develop a player like that and let him go. Of course, there was the whole circus like sale to the Cypriot club that was a bit of a mystery.
Odd, isn't it? Yeah.
But so I think there's reasons why you want those homegrown players, and the academy is important. But hopefully some of them will graduate. But you're always going to have the world stars.
You talked about Greg Vanney obviously being on the clock. What about Tim Bezbachenko? Obviously he's made some very big moves this off season. This is going to be his second full year in charge at the helm. Surely. I would think that unless this team makes the playoffs, then his future at the club might be in jeopardy.
I think that it might depend, John, on really who's above him. If there's been some talk that they might look to install a president,
right.
I guess it depends on what happens when what happens with Tim Leiwicki, if he does indeed leave, and whoever takes over, and what their thoughts are about the club. It's a somewhat smaller operation than the Raptors and the Leafs, so maybe you don't need one. But if they install somebody above him, that will change things. But I think one thing I've learned so far is you don't really count Bezbachenko out. He's a very canny operator.
I would agree, absolutely.
And so I think he can take care of himself.
Well, as
Ryan Nelson found out.
As the new slogan this year says, there's always something with TFC, and yeah. We love it. It really makes our job a lot easier. Neil, thank you so much, mate. We'll chat to you real soon.
I hope so. Thanks a lot for having me.
Cheers, Neil.
Bye-bye.
That's Neil Davidson of the Canadian Press. You can follow Neil at Neil M. Davidson. He is one of probably the most established soccer journalists in the country, right? Fair to say.
Fair to say.
Doing it longer, I think, than anyone else.
Fair to say. Yeah. It's funny you mention that, because when I first started out in the business, Neil and I, we covered Toronto Lynx games together.
Oh, yeah, really?
At Varsity Stadium. So that tells you how long he's been doing.
Well, it's a good day for me. It's Throwback Monday because, years ago on Sports World and then the Footy Show, we had Neil as a regular guest.
That's right, yeah.
And that was great. And then later today, I'm doing a segment about the Cricket World Cup with Faraz Sarwat.
Oh, there you go.
He used to be on Sports World for a long, long time back in the day. So it's a very nostalgic Monday for me. Really enjoying it.
Cool.
It makes sense about that, the whole president storyline with TFC, and I find it just amusing because it was only about 3 years ago now that we were called into meetings and discussion forums with Toronto FC brass and MLSC brass as members of the media, and we put it to them, it's time that you got a president, and they agreed, yeah, we must get a president for this football club, and they got Kevin Payne. Didn't work out. In comes Leiwicki, and the whole idea of needing a president went away, kind of fell away.
Mm-hmm.
And now with Leiwicki leaving, maybe they do need one at some point. A guy with a huge Rolodex.
Right.
A guy that has connections, a football guy. But then you wonder, what that means for a Bezbachenko if he's not their guy. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, once again.
No, absolutely.
I still think, this club needs that figurehead.
I would think so. And I think it has to be someone. Well, you remember like a couple months ago, I reported that they were talking to Garth Lagerwey,
mm-hmm.
The GM at Real Salt Lake. They had one or two talks, and then it was nothing really sort of serious. But he ended up going to Salt Lake. So, I do think they were interested at the time in reestablishing that sort of managerial structure with a club president. Whether they're still, searching, I haven't heard anything. But I think with all the uncertainty with around Tim Leiwicki, I don't think it would be the worst move in the world to get a dedicated soccer guy as a club president and now how that would work with Bezbachenko and that whole dynamic, that's that leads to other interesting questions. But
it much depends on who the new
absolutely
MLSE pres is,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And I think if you're a TFC fan, there must be some concern there, because you knew that Leiwicki, for all his faults and bravado, he had the club's back,
right?
He loved soccer and wanted to make it work in this city. So he leaves, the new guy coming in may be completely contrary to that.
Well, possibly, but I don't think the new whoever the new MLSE president is, I don't think he's going to sort of say soccer, whatever, push that to a side. Will it be this as much of a priority as it was under Tim Leiwicki? Probably not, because he was very passionate about the sport. He was long involved in MLS for a long time. But I don't think it'll be, as I said, just pushed aside whatever. We'll let the soccer guys.
But does it make it more important again this year to be successful? Because if you have a successful team club pulling in 30,000 fans a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Putting in lots of money, then a new guy comes in, whoever he is, looks at the business model and goes, well, this team's generating some good cash for us.
Right.
And sure, they spent a lot of money in the offseason on this Jovinko guy, whoever he is,
mm-hmm.
but it's successful. If they're struggling, by the time a new guy arrives, let's say it's August and they're dead last, and you know you've got this 30,000 seat stadium and there's 18 coming out, mm-hmm. 15 coming out. New guy comes in and goes, what are we paying these guys? You know, optically it looks a lot better if they're successful when the new guy comes in. So it's more pressure to be successful from a management standpoint.
Sure. Yeah, probably.
You want to have a very sustainable product by the time the new boss comes in.
No, I think that's fair. Although, I mean, I don't think the new guy would necessarily come in and look at it and say, if they were struggling, say, how come we're paying all these sort of outrageous salaries? We're expanding the stadium. I'm going to gut this. I'm going to like cut back expenses. I think if anything, MLSC will kind of triple down and throw more money at it because that's just sort of their MO. So mm-hmm. I think you're right. Obviously there's going to be more pressure now, but you know, that's pro sports, right?
Sure.
That's just the way it is.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, since Lobby came aboard, they've been throwing big money at big time players, right?
Yeah.
And have done some things that perhaps wouldn't have happened if not for him being here. For example, Michael Bradley.
Right.
You know, his connections within the league.
Yeah. I mean, would they go after like another Michael Bradley or another Jovinko or another Defoe? I mean, I don't know. That's a very valid question. My thinking is maybe not to that extent because they've been burned so much, but I don't think they would cut off, you know, resources altogether. I think they would, as I said, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment's MO has been, let's spend our way out of trouble. And
sure,
I think
they
would continue that.
But they might.
Would they spend the same levels as they have? No, probably not. And I think that's a fair point.
The Galactica model doesn't work in MLS, right?
Right, absolutely.
Which is what they might determine.
Right.
But if they're successful and they're, you know, making the playoffs and putting all this money in, then perhaps it's easier to convince them this time next year. You know, let's invest some more money on some more, you know, top talent.
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, that this season is going to be critical, right? Just in terms of determining the long-term future of this club,
mm-hmm.
both on the pitch and financially, because, you know, it's 8 seasons now. And, you know, if they can't pull it together now with all those sort of resources they've had, both in terms of, you know, money and MLSE and the players that they have with the expanded format,
mm-hmm.
you know, then I really don't know what to say. I mean, then it really is, you know, yeah, I'd just be speechless.
Well, they're in the midst of preseason. You see Bradley scored for the U.S. from a corner.
I did, yeah.
Like directly from the corner.
Yeah.
Against Panama. Was it Sunday? It was yesterday, right?
Yeah, it was Sunday.
Yeah, it was something special.
It was, yeah.
You bring that to the TFC set piece.
Yeah, well.
System.
We got the video up on Sports.
Oh, is it there? Yeah.
Yeah, if anyone's interested. So, but yeah, it was quite something. You see it every once in a while, but not too often that someone's scoring.
Well, you see them trying to curl it to the back post, hoping someone's there, right?
And yeah, and that's,
again, it goes in, right?
Yeah, and like I don't think he intended to do it, right? No. I think he was just, well, I'm going to swing in a dangerous ball to the far post, and it just happened to be, it was a really in-swinging ball, and the goalkeeper couldn't deal with it.
But both Bradley and Josie have scored in recent days for Team USA.
Yeah,
Bows well.
Although Josie came off injured.
Yeah. Do you know how bad?
They're saying it's just a precaution, U.S. Mm-hmm. men's national team. I think it was just a minor tweaking of his, like, either hamstring or something like that. So hopefully it's not too serious.
It wouldn't be a U.S. international without Josie getting hurt.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be, you know, I mean, this is just typical in terms of it's something more serious than TFC getting, you know, bad luck for
them. Well, you know, Jovinko at the press conference last week was saying he likes to play as a striker or behind the striker.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, because I asked him that. That was the first question.
That's yours, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
I said, What's your preferred position? Because as I've said, and I think Greg Vanney said, and most media pundits and coaches agree that his best position is as what we call in Italy the tre quartista, so just behind the main striker in a supporting role. But he said, no, striker. He wants to be the front man. But he also said, look, I can play in a number of positions. So
yeah.
I don't think it's going to be an issue. But
Well, I mean, it depends on the formation.
Exactly.
4-2-3-1 looks obvious, but we know Vanney likes a 4-3-3-2. Right,
that's
not
true.
A 4-3-2, a 4-3-3 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's confusing there. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, COO.
But I mean, I think that's one of the great things about Jovinko is that he can play. He's so versatile. He can play a number of positions.
Just don't waste him out wide. Don't do that.
Well,
he can do it. He could be one of those inverted wingers, just cuts inside whenever he'll have a free roll to do what the hell he wants, right?
Exactly. Yeah, there's an argument to be made that if he's out on the wing, that you know he might be taking less physical abuse. Mm-hmm. And that he can kind of come in more easily and then run directly at defenders, and that he might be effective that way. But I've long argued that I think you want your most influential players at kind of like in the heart of, you know, the center of the pitch. And I think that's where you got to put him.
Who starts right now? If you're starting tomorrow, season begins tomorrow, who's the 11?
I think it's from left to right. It's Joe Bendik in goal. Mm-hmm. From left to right in defense, it's Justin Morrow, Stephen Caldwell, Damian Perkis, Mark Bloom.
Right. If it's 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, if it's 4-2-3-1, then I think it's Cheru and Bradley.
Right.
Then I think it's Osorio, Jovinko, and on the right, I don't know, maybe Jackson, I guess.
You think, yeah? You don't think Finley's going to start?
Could be.
Because he could start left and Osorio could start right.
Yeah, could be. And then obviously Altidore up front. Mm-hmm. If it's 4-4-2, then I think it's Cheru and Bradley up front, or Bradley in the middle. Osorio and Jackson and Jovinko and Altidore.
Yeah. Be interesting to find out, especially with the Finley acquisition. It was very quiet, wasn't it, when they signed him? But
yeah,
he's got the experience. He's got experience. He might be a good foot soldier to have. And Jackson was exciting to watch, I guess, last year, wasn't he?
Exciting's a word for it.
Yeah, it was good and bad.
Good and bad. I mean, when he was good, he was dangerous. And what I liked about him was he tracked back. Like, he had a lot of defensive responsibility that he showed. So I think it was quite well.
All right, time to move on now. And we are joined by friend of the show, Adrian Bradbury. He of Football for Good, Gulu United, from Gulu, Uganda. Adrian, welcome to the show from those distant lands.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, now you've been on the show before, but for those who are listening to you for the first time, explain to us quite what Gulu United is and what you're doing over there in Uganda, where you moved just before Christmas with your entire family.
Yeah, so we've started a professional football club and a youth academy in northern Uganda. And, the big reason or what we're trying to do is I believe that there's an incredible number of kind of competitive advantages to developing a club here, and I think a lot of the engagement with football on the African continent, often with clubs, is kind of pulling the best players out of communities and taking them abroad. And we believe that we could actually develop clubs, develop an academy, and keep the boys home. Those that make it and are kind of go on to the next level can also those transfer fees and the dollars and what we do to be engaged in the business of the game can actually be a part of sustaining a club and actually investing in a bunch of other community development. So we're here full time to get it going, and actually today was day one of our youth academy.
Oh, fantastic! And you moved there with your two boys who were both involved in academy football over here in Toronto. Can you compare the kids from what you're used to in a Canadian academy to what you're seeing now in Uganda?
Yeah, like I think, I have a technical director, actually, Victor Sate, who's a UEFA licensed coach, and we've been in and out a couple of times. And I would say that up until the age of kind of 13 or 14, the boys here, their technical ability, their ability to make decisions on the ball is head and shoulders above anything we've seen in Canada. It's anything that we've seen with clubs that we visited in Europe, that there's, while the game is raw, that there's something about being on the ball 24/7 that makes them very, very special. And I think what's lacking is all the kids that we've seen kind of going up to when they get to about 14, the level is amazing. And then when they get to that age, though, and puberty kicks in and physical development starts to happen, is then the game becomes kind of a bit physical. There's no training and development. So, and what we're trying to do here is kind of help structure and not take away from what makes the kids really special, but help enhance and develop that. And I think, that's the opportunity. And I said to my kids with Isaac and Owen, like, this is a real development opportunity for them. And they're going to learn to compete at a whole new level, because the kids here, they want it and they need it more than kids at home. And it's certainly evident by training and working with the boys here.
Adrian, what was your motivation in starting this project?
I've been working in Northern Uganda for almost 10 years, so certainly have a connection to the community. And so part of it is me kind of giving back and giving the community here a chance. And I also think I'm not doing it kind of solely as charity. Like for me, we talk about businesses, like there's a lot of really incredible businesses happening in sub-Saharan Africa, whether it's solar and medical advancements and others. I think in the same way, there are a lot of competitive advantages to doing football here. Like I think the African Cup of Nations just finished yesterday, and it was Ghana and Ivory Coast. And I find it comical that it's all West Africa. And I think, you know, knowing the culture of the game here in Uganda and elsewhere in East Africa, there just hasn't been investment. There hasn't been commitment. And I think there's a lot of what's happening there can happen here. And I believe that we can really use football as a tool to do community development and be a real leader, not just in sport, but in business.
How have you been received? What's been the reaction in the local community there?
It's been great. Like I said, I have some good relationships from some of the past advocacy that I've done with Guluwalk, and I've been here, you know, there was a 25-year civil conflict going on, and so I have a lot of good relationships. But I think, you know, just like we were having a conversation tonight and with a couple of folks locally, and it's, you know, we want to do a lot of other work beyond football. Like I think, you know, whether it's health messaging or whether it's engagement in agriculture, other things that we can do to engage youth. Like there's, in the same way that TFC or the Raptors or the Leafs engage the community, there's a brand now around Google United that people are asking about. And I think we want to leverage that in the same way, not to just kind of get footballers and identify kids, but I think we can also be a part of community development and really get people excited. And there's certainly a lot of momentum and a lot of people are really excited about what we're doing.
I urge our listeners to check out guluunited.com. You write a great blog on there, Adrian, and recently there was one you posted about the parental meetings and how it is nothing like you'd ever experienced before.
Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible. There's, my boys played academy football in Canada, and I've been to a lot of parents' meetings where the discussions are about, futsal versus turf and a lot of the, you know, where we're traveling next on tournaments. And, we had one parent stand up and make a pronouncement that he was HIV positive. And that's not a lot of people here in Northern Uganda or elsewhere in Sub-Saharan Africa can do that and are brave enough to be that bold. And he asked the question, you know, I have two boys who we selected for the academy. One is a U13, one's a U15, and he asked, what will we do? And we said, you know, we'll get them tested, and if they're tested, we'll get them the medication that they need, and we'll make them part of the academy. And, in my blog, and we talked about it, it's you get this big round of applause. And kind of going back, you know, the round of applause is for that father that, you know, he was willing to stand up and say that and make a pronouncement that where he was and that he wanted to take care of his boys. And so it's very different. And, we've had some incredibly special parents meetings where we're paying for their education, we're providing all the football, but we're asking the parents to also pay for kind of requirements for school, which means showing up with a mattress and showing up with some of the clothes that they need. And so they're making a commitment as well. And I know it's really difficult for them. So, there's some incredible people and they're trusting us with their boys who are going to kind of be full-time boarded and be a part of this academy. And it's, it makes it all the more worthwhile. And we know the kind of impact we can make with these kids. So it's a lot of fun.
Tell us a little bit about the boys. I mean, what are the kids like that you're working with there?
Yeah, the variety is amazing. Like we have everywhere from 8 to 18. We're having the conversation tonight, and we have this kid who's 8. It's very funny. We noticed him by accident. He was initially called Little Messi. this was in this really rural area in Uganda. We were only running trials for 12 to to 16s and or sorry 12 to 18s, and he was playing with his buddies. He did a couple stepovers and slid a ball between a kid's legs, and I saw this kid and I was like, wow. I talked to one of my coaches, go talk to him and find out about him. And we brought him over, we ran him with the U10s, and he was the best player. We brought him into Gulu with the 11s, and he was one of the best players, and we selected him. And and it's funny, so his actual name is Genesis, which is, you know, obviously the kind of the beginning. And and so there's stories like that where he has, and you watch this kid as a football fan and as a somebody who understands youth development, to watch him collect the ball, look over his shoulder, open up and make a pass at eight is incredible. And we've had him with the 11s with the fast. We started today and we've been running out a little bit. You know, that's kind of one of the stories. And there are a bunch of them around. You know, one of our goalkeepers is one of seven kids where mom and dad have passed away and they're being raised by an aunt, and he wouldn't be in school if he's not with Gulu United. And there's, you know, there's 10 or 20 of those stories. And there's a lot of, whether it's their age or whether it's their circumstance, you know, we're having a really interesting impact, not just football, but a chance to really be mentors and give these kids a real chance.
And that's, I think, really important to emphasize. As much as this is a football academy, you know, it's so much more than just football. It's about giving these kids a chance that they just wouldn't have ordinarily. There's a great picture actually on the website I'm seeing now. It's a classroom, all these kids studying, but they're wearing their football boots. Mm. it's brilliant. Yeah. And a lot of these kids, I imagine, 6 months ago didn't even have boots. Is that fair to say?
For sure. Yeah, like we had, we opened up today and so we had 49 kids that are full-time now part of the academy. And I would say, you know, two-thirds of them have never put boots on before. So the ones that you had shoes or others that you saw in those photos, yeah, like we had, you know, we brought a kid to TFC trial last year and was eight months wearing boots before he had that experience. And, yeah, so today they all got kit. You know, they had shorts and socks and their tops. And I've tweeted a bit of that today and hopefully get some more photos up. But, yeah, it's a new experience and, it's really exciting for them. And it's funny, we were managing the coaches is that they also have incredibly wide, thick feet because they've been playing in bare feet.
Yeah, right. Mm.
They have very strong feet. Yeah. So getting them into boots has always been a challenge as well, but we've had, and it's funny. So all the boots today, we're all from Canadian clubs. We're all from Canadian supporters. You know, we had hundreds of boots out for them today, and everybody was sized and set up. So, generosity of the folks and clubs at home too that have made our launch possible.
That's fantastic. As mentioned, GuluUnited.com. Get on there. You can find out all you need to know about this great project. Adrian, you're doing good things, mate. Thanks for joining us and hope to talk to you real soon.
For sure. Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks again.
It's Adrian Bradbury. You can follow Adrian on Twitter at Adrian Bradbury. Yeah, it's a fascinating project. It really is. And like I said, Adrian moved his entire family over there just before Christmas. So
it's quite a commitment.
Yeah, it really is. They are well and truly into this. And yes, great website, fascinating stories, great pictures. So just shows the other side of football and what it can offer as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, J-Mo, we're almost out of time, but we should mention the Premier League story briefly.
Sure.
I know you don't want to.
I want to.
Your beloved Arsenal lost to Spurs 2-1. Harry Kane with two goals. What a performance from him after the Gunners went up 1-0. Good game. That was a good derby.
It was very entertaining.
Yeah.
It was very entertaining.
Do you believe Spurs, they've turned it around, haven't they? It's taken them some time.
Yeah.
But they look to be a real cohesive bunch now.
Yeah, I think so. I think this was like a statement game for both sides, really, that this was really an opportunity for both of them to make a major statement in terms of their intentions for the top four. And I think Spurs won made the statement much more so than Arsenal. Arsenal, you know, they opened the scoring, but they were always, they just looked off. I mean, the Spurs was more intense. They were beating them to balls throughout the game. Harry Kane played out of his skin. So I think, Spurs were the better side and they clearly deserved to win.
You think, see, every year there's someone who's English who stands out and suddenly the media go nuts. It was Andros Townsend about this time last year, I think it was. I think a call up after a great run of games with Spurs, actually.
Yeah. Berahino earlier.
Berahino is a prime example, too. Yeah, this guy's can't miss prospect, right? Is Kane different? to that, or do you actually think he could be
something? Well, it's an interesting question, James. It could be. I mean, it could be, but I think it's far too early to say definitively that he's going to be the next, you know, great English striker, the next Alan Shearer. It takes time, right? I think we just have to. It's too small of a sample size, you know, because he wasn't starting in the Premier League up until really November. He was mostly playing in Europa, so it's only the last couple of months that he's gotten regular first team football in the Premier League, and he's certainly done well. I'm not discounting that, but you know, I wouldn't sort of start linking him to Real Madrid just yet. I'm sure there are. But, you know, I mean, could he be, you know, the next great English player? Absolutely could. But I think it's far too early to tell.
Oh, it is. But what I like about him is he's not the guy that, you know, wows you with his pace or, you know, his step over. He's an old-fashioned centre forward, but he can do many things. You know, he can score from outside the box. We've seen that a lot this season so far. He's got a good touch around goal. He holds the ball up pretty well.
He does, yeah.
He's just, like you mentioned, Alan Shearer, right? And the obvious comparisons are going to be there because he's a big specimen.
Right.
He's English and he's old school and he scores goals.
So. He does. I mean, he's not going to beat anyone for pace. He's not going to sort of take defenders on one-on-one, but he's very physical. I think, as you said, he holds up the ball very well, very good around the box with a good, you know, touch on the ball. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, it certainly bodes well so far. And I think the fact that, you know, Pochettino has unleashed him and he's responded this way, I think it's you know, full credit to Pochettino for doing that.
It was a much better derby than the Merseyside derby. 0-0.
Oh, yeah.
Hardly a great one there.
That was dire.
Liverpool, I thought, were odds on the better team in that match. Everton weren't great at their moments, but Liverpool couldn't finish.
Yeah.
Didn't have that touch. And until they get Sturridge back for 90 minutes, they probably won't.
Right.
A lot of talk about Raheem Sterling this morning, about his contract situations. Rodgers has
come out. Didn't he just resign?
No, he's on the brink of it. They're talking.
Okay.
And Rodgers has said this morning that, you know, we've made an incredible offer to him and this is the best place for him. So when the manager starts going off at his press conferences about contract negotiations, you wonder if there's some stumbling blocks there.
Right.
And if he's concerned, because he's basically put it out publicly.
Right.
We want this guy back. We've got a great deal on there. It's up to him now. Yeah. Pressure's on Raheem Sterling now.
Right.
That concerns me as a Liverpool fan.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, I don't think you'd be without suitors elsewhere. So.
No, absolutely. Villa, they fell to Chelsea 2-1. They scored a goal. Good to see.
What was it, 11 hours and change?
Yeah, just insane. Wow. I call them the Aston Villa Maple Leafs.
That's good. I like that.
Just dreadful. But Chelsea 3 more points, and that means they got a 7-point lead now on the table because City drew Hull.
Yeah,
1-1.
At home. Had to score a late goal to salvage even a point out of that. That was
winless in the absence of Yaya Toure.
Yes, and now they get Yaya back because Ivory Coast won the African Cup of Nations.
Penalties, yesterday. No less, against Ghana.
You know, it's funny. I watched that game, and the 90 minutes and the 30 minutes of overtime were absolutely dreadful. I mean, it was just, oh my God, mind-numbingly boring. But that penalty shootout, for people who don't like shootouts, and who say, oh, there's no drama and it's just a lottery, nonsense. This was one of the best shootouts I've ever seen. And like the fact that it was the second string, or it might even be the third string goalkeeper for Ivory Coast who started. So he ended up making the decisive save. And then he turned around and he converted the decisive penalty kick.
Amazing.
And Ivory Coast missed their first two. And then they ended up like scoring on their next nine or something. Like, it was unbelievably dramatic.
Not since great. We saw Ludo Goretz do the unimaginable in the Europa League qualifiers.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's his name? Oh.
Oh, the goalkeeper. Yeah.
The center back who came on
as the goalkeeper. Yeah.
And then made the save. Yeah. And he scored two. Oh, what's his name? Whatever.
I don't recall.
It's a Ludo Goretz.
Yeah.
Defender. What do you want? Yeah. But he's got a name. A stand named after him because of that performance.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the owners, like about a month later, said, we're going to rename the stand after this dude.
Right. Interesting. I mean,
Potsy.
That's it.
Right. Potsy.
But I mean, getting back to City, I mean, yeah, they're no doubt going to be glad that Yaya Toure's back because he'll add some, you know.
Well, he better find the found for the Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
The last 3 or 4 weeks.
I mean, I don't think 7 points is insurmountable because as we've seen, Chelsea can certainly draw points to lesser opponents, right? But I mean, the thing is, they don't play each other again.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is, you know, they're going to have to drop points at least 2 or 3 times and City is going to have to capitalize. That's the other thing. I know that sounds, obvious, but when Chelsea have dropped points before, they haven't necessarily always fully capitalized. So
I don't see it happening.
Watch.
Myself.
Could be.
I don't see it happening. But you're right, 7 points is not impossible. Well, as mentioned, it's a very busy week in the Premier League on Sportsnet. On Tuesday, we have Spurs against Liverpool. That's a beauty.
That'll be a good one.
Two informed teams, obviously, fighting for fourth place. Mm-hmm. Fair to say. There's a few teams ahead of them still, but still, that should be a great one. It's 2 p.m. Eastern. And on Wednesday, we have Burnley against Manchester United.
Yeah.
And Stoke against Man City. And Newcastle against Palace.
Yeah. We've got another game Tuesday, too, but I can't remember what it is offhand.
Do we? It's three there.
There's two games on Tuesday, and we've got three on Wednesday.
Oh, two on Tuesday, is it?
Yeah.
On Tuesday, where are we?
Tottenham, Liverpool, and I want to say Palace.
According to the grid here, it just has
Spurs, I don't pay attention.
But I know. There's clearly another one there. Yeah. Anyway. Check it out. That's
Tuesday. Five games altogether.
And we'll recap what happened on Thursday's podcast with those two dumbasses, Brendan Dunlop and Thomas Dobby.
That's all right, Jamo. Nice.
Thanks, mate. Great job.
Thanks.
Thanks to Neil Davison. Thanks to Adrian Bradford. It's been fun. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll chat later. Bye.